From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin. In a few minutes, smooth music, dim lights, the cabaret theater experience in Transing, North Texas. We'll start tonight with a landmark type of cancer treatment that's found a home in Dallas. UT Southwestern Medical Center has been charged with developing the country's first national center for heavy ion radiation therapy. As part of KERA's breakthrough initiative, Dr. Hak Choi with UT Southwestern joins Justin Martin to talk about what it means for North Texas.
Dr. Hak Choi, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
First off, can you tell me in layman's terms, what is heavy ion radiation therapy?
So you may have heard about radiation therapy treating cancer patients using regular X-rays, which is some degree effective, but not very precise. What's more precise is proton therapy. Proton therapy is a bit more accurate, but biologically similar to the conventional radiotherapy. Heavy ion therapy is very accurate. It kills the cancer cell 3 to 4 times more than proton or conventional radiotherapy.
Can this therapy be used against a broad spectrum of cancers, or is it just aimed towards a specific type?
So the typical tumor type that may benefit from carbon therapy or heavy ion therapy are head and neck cancers, the lung cancer, perhaps even pancreatic cancers, or many of the cancers that failed with the conventional radiotherapy will be beneficial with the heavy ion therapy.
The National Cancer Institute awarded UT Southwestern a $1 million grant to develop proposals for the center. Why was UT Southwestern selected for the grant?
So we competed with the 6 other centers in the United States, and we have an amazing number of talented team of investigators and scientists, team of physicians, team of physicists, and the biologists and engineers. UT Southwestern, we have all the talented group we put together the last 10 years.
Do you know when the center will be built?
Right now we are at the planning stage, and most likely we will start building either sometime next year. And it'll take good 4 to 5 years of building period. And we anticipate treat our first patient sometime 2020 or 21.
To my understanding, the U.S. pioneered heavy ion radiation therapy back in 1954, but shut down the program in the 90s?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? So the Lawrence Berkeley pioneered the particle therapy way back in the 1950s. The first proton therapy patient treated in the United States in the 1950s. And then it shut down in 1993, I believe, due to lack of funding.
And then the research was sent overseas?
And the research moved on to Japan and Germany. They took the idea and treated many cancer patients since then, particularly with heavy ion therapy.
So where does the proposal go from here?
We need to finalize funding to build a facility and put together a team of investigators and physicians and physics team to be able to build it and run the facility.
Dr. Hak Choi is chair and professor of radiation oncology at UT Southwestern Medical Center. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Texas high school students are only required to pass 5 standardized state tests. That's down from 15 a few years ago. Still, many parents and lawmakers think schools spend too much time teaching to the test. Today on Think, William McKenzie, editorial director of the Bush Institute, defended testing as a measure of accountability and told Chris Boyd it's important to remember that many students are taking benchmark tests beyond those required by the state.
In Dallas, they have 2 official benchmarks. That is in January and in the school year. And that's part of what we saw the big hoo-ha about here when Mike Miles had some parents protesting over these benchmark tests being in grades kindergarten through second grade. Personally, I think there is science that shows some of this can really help us grasp early what kids are knowing or not knowing in kindergarten through second grade. But Miles also came back and said, okay, we'll give up some of these benchmark tests. And I think that was probably a smart move, you know, in some ways to do. But, you know, these add to the frequency of tests. And I think that is what parents are oftentimes complaining about.
You can read William McKenzie's essay, The Big Idea of School Accountability, at kera.org/think, where you can also listen to the podcast of today's show. Think re-airs tonight at 9. Cabaret combines the bang of a theatrical performance with the intimacy of a jazz club, and it's happening all over North Texas. Art and Seek's Shelley Canavy caught up with 3 groups that are bringing the art form back in a big way.
Wish I
a dark room, a jazz trio, a silky voice. It's cabaret night at the Salmon Center, and Heather Patterson croons a soulful tune originally recorded by Billie Holiday. The word cabaret can mean lots of things. An elegant jazz singer with a piano, George Gershwin and Irving Berlin and the Great American Songbook. And to some, it's come to mean something seedy. Singer Denise Lee is trying to change that particular image.
One of the taglines I put on the Dallas Cabaret Artist page is, "Dear strip clubs, I'd like my name back. Love cabaret."
Legitimate cabaret in North Texas varies. At Lee's relaxed club-style shows at the Uptown Theater Cabaret Room in Grand Prairie, you're encouraged to grab drinks during the show. At Salmon's Cabaret in Dallas, it's more formal, a show with an intermission. Hotel bars and jazz clubs have hosted cabaret singers for years, but some have closed recently. Salmon's Cabaret founder Tracy Fulton says it's booming.
The first year and a half, we were literally calling friends and family and using social media because we didn't have a budget. And now it's definitely selling out.
Everyone agrees cabaret is, at its core, an intimate musical theater experience that includes the audience. That's what Denise Lee aims to deliver in her new cabaret series, Denise Lee on Stage.
The words in between the songs are just as important as the songs themselves and the through line that they have to have. What makes it different from just a club gig is that there's a whole concept.
Salmon's Cabaret usually features a single performer, but the recent season opener was a group showcase. W.T. Greer did an interpretation of a Lionel Richie song.
Hello, baby.
While Marc Toussaint kept it traditional, even down to the jokes.
I recognize so many of you people, and you're so well behaved tonight. It's amazing the difference between bourbon and wine.
Fly me to the moon.
At Frontline Productions, it's always a group show. They're based at the Kitchen Cafe in North Dallas. I caught up with Frontline's James McQuillan at an Uptown coffee shop. Funny coincidence, a bit of cabaret-sounding jazz was playing in the background as we talked about how cabaret can be more than just a quick drink accompanied by a song or two. It can be a full experience.
So we came up with this kamikaze cabaret concept. There's like maybe like 8 to 14 people on an evening around a theme. Like in March, what we're going to be doing is an evening celebrating Stephen Sondheim.
McQuillan and his partner Jay Gardner say producing a cabaret is simply more practical than putting up a full musical, but it still has the feel of a night at the theater.
And that's sort of where we're drawn more to. I mean, I love an amazing jazz singer, but we're drawn to that more sort of theatrical quality of cabaret.
Tracy Fulton thinks it's a special kind of person who performs cabaret. It takes a certain artistry.
I think the best cabaret artists are the ones, they have a passion for what they're doing. They love talking about the artist that wrote this or the first time it was performed at whatever venue. They get music, and this is what, this is their life.
Shelley Kennavy, KERA News.
From the KERA Newsroom, I'm BJ Austin.